possible interest, I'm going to discuss personal karma, how our personal karma works within oneself and between the people that we're connected with. So maybe I should better wait for people to roll in. So when we look at one's personal karma, we're talking about that, you know, the vast storehouse of karma which we see both that we've actually generated both in the current life and in the numberless number of lives we've had previously in the process of karma and rebirth. And as the Buddha said in the suttas, that there's no beginning point to the origin of the karma that we've generated through the course of the lives that we've lived in high and low states, you know, within this particular universal cycle that we find ourselves. And so, you know, when you look at that principle of no beginning point can be found to the origin, the starting point, the first point of when, karma, you know, which this particular consciousness, this being, creates and is subjected to, there's no beginning point. So you're looking at, you know, absolutely potentially millions and millions of lives, you know, just endless lives. And, you know, for people who have, say, incredible meditation, have the potential to recollect, the facets of different lives, even in past, universal cycles, past expansions and contractions of the universe. And from memory, I think the Buddha was able to recall, I think it was maybe possibly 94 expansions and contractions of the universe from the sutta rendering. And so, you know, you're looking at this vast storehouse of past karma, you know, say both in simple terms, both say good, bad, and neutral, that we've generated in past lives at many, many different levels, you know, as human beings, as angel beings, as gods, you know, ruling heaven worlds, as predatory animals within the animal kingdom, and it's even sort of, you know, you have the states of deprived spirits, you know, like hungry ghosts, and at the very lowest end of the scale, where you have hell beings whose lives are very, very miserable and essentially afflicted by pain, largely pain and suffering, you know, continuously. So as we move through life to life, you know, we generate different qualities of karma, in the views, the ideas, the perceptions we have of ourselves and other people, and not only the way we view ourselves, but the people around us, but the way that we experience and understand the universe to a degree through our consciousness. And so, you know, the three main pathways where karma is generated is the thoughts that you think, and those thoughts are going to be driven, you know, by your emotional mindset, you know, by the feelings that you have within your personality. And they are your feelings are the energy which drive your thought processes. You know, because, you know, without emotions, you know, strong emotions, that you would be, I mean, very, very cool. You'd be as cool as a cucumber, so to speak. And, you know, your mind would be very, very quiet and peaceful, because there's no, you know, like no real strong feelings, no energizing component to instigate and drive your thinking, your views, your opinions, your likes and dislikes. It's your feelings which give your life color and meaning, and give you a very large interpretation of the world that you experience. You know, you're going to filter your personal experience, you know, through largely through your emotional makeup, through the conditioning of your personality. And, you know, and where does this personality come from? You know, it's made up of all the experiences that you've had previously, you know, all the experiences which have come from mum and dad, from extended family and friends. You could even, you know, even vague things like drug and alcohol, use and experimentation. You know, people's minds, you know, get affected by these substances, and so, you know, when that's the components that you would see in the current life, and then you have this just vast, I mean, reservoir of past life experience. You know, all the lives that you've had previously in high and low states, and, you know, so those memories and personal experiences, you know, from the deep past, you know, right down, much, you know, very, very deep in your conscious awareness, that, you know, that just slowly filter up to the surface level, you know, of the mind, and you know, they affect your current personality and behavior in both, say, subtle and intermediate ways, and even within one's say sleep cycle. You know, when people, you know, just on both levels, when people close their eyes and they just see the, you know, just the activity and some of the really just weird, strange, unusual material which bubbles up in the mind when you just close your eyes in your day-to-day experience. You know, all sorts of strange and funny ideas, you know, views and opinions, which you might feel is, you know, it's not really you. You know, like with your current personality, you may feel that you have a degree of solidity there, that it, you know, it feels quite, you know, quite firm, quite tangible, and, you know, you have this sense of this you know, this particular mindset is what I am. This is my character, my nature. And all this other stuff is essentially like babble. It's rubbish, which is in the sort of like the background awareness of the mind. You know when we go through our day-to-day experience, and also, you know, you have this other material which is much deeper down, that you may only see largely in your dreams, your sleep state. You know, so when you have your five senses largely disarmed, and so this, you know, this material which is deeper down in the deep past can bubble up, you know, much more easily You know, it's not masked or overlaid by the conscious personality so much, and you know, you can get quite strange phenomena coming up in dreams, and deep memories, potentially linked with the past, past lives. And when I was talking with Longpo Plien from Nong Khai, no, actually with this particular monastery, he was up north, he was in Chiang Mai. He's got a couple of monasteries around the Chiang Mai area. And he was saying that, both for the lay fraternity and for the monastics, that, it's quite possible for you to recall the past life with what they called, access, concentration, or upachara samadhi, which is that mind state where the thinking process, essentially, it's stilled. That you can't, as you're meditating at the level of upachara samadhi, that you can't. The thinking process is essentially it's stilled. When you're talking about really firm upachara, you can't actually see thinking activity at work. The four mental elements of the five both the bodily sensation and the four mental components of the mind, feeling, perception, thinking activity and consciousness are tranquilized, because how can you expect to see a past life if your mind is constantly babbling and thinking? You really need, you need clarity, you need stillness, you need, quietude, the stillness of mind, in order to have the power to reflect back, to access, deep memories from the past life, or possibly, maybe even two lifetimes back. But essentially, the potential is there with very, very still, firm, quite powerful meditation, that the potential is there to recollect the past life or have flashbacks within that meditation process. And that can be very, very useful for your wisdom, your understanding. In your day-to-day experience. And as many of the forest masters will say, that the samadhi or tranquility meditation, peaceful states of mind, are just a cause for wisdom to arise. So it's all very nice to get peaceful and tranquil, which is quite relaxing, enjoyable, and gives you some relief from the busyness, excessive thinking and worry and concerns. And it's a state of happiness, of calm and freedom from the stress that you have in your day-to-day experience. So, but the essentially, the whole nature of the Buddhist path is geared to the development of insight and understanding. And so, everything that you do with the practice, to the threefold training of keeping the five precepts to the best of your ability, to the development of samadhi or tranquility meditation, and the development of insight, investigation, and understanding is geared towards, you know, towards to deep knowledge, to increase one's understanding of yourself, other people, the world around you. And when that meditation goes very, very deep and profound on both sides, then you have the potential to break through, to the enlightenment stages. And with the realization of the path, when one has accessed the realization of Nibbana, which is the deepest possible mind state that you can experience as a human being, or any world which is higher than that, and the insight knowledges which follow on afterwards have the power to break through this cycle of karma and rebirth. So, that would be, say, the pinnacle point of the Buddha's system of training. So when we look at this this principle of personal karma, what are we actually talking about in a tangible format? We will be looking at the way the relationship that you have with yourself, the way that you perceive yourself as a personality, the composition, the factors, the mental factors that you actually see that your personality is made of, and then the dynamics between you as you move out, the dynamics between you and your family and friends and associates, and with the people in the community that you live in, and maybe even potentially if you do a lot of traveling, the people that you contact on a global level. So, the relationship experiences that you have with oneself, the relationship that you have with oneself and with the people around you is quite tangible in the sense that this karma that especially the karma that you experience between oneself and the people around you, especially the people who are close to you, is quite crucial and quite important in the sense that you can absolutely guarantee, especially between really firm relationships, between between boyfriend, girlfriend, husbands and wives, and close friends, these relationships are very crucial and valuable in the sense that they have the potential to activate quite substantial insight knowledge within oneself, and insight knowledge into the factors of the path and the unfolding of the path. Because people who meditate tend to be more sensitive and intuitive than the average person walking the street. And that sensitivity and intuition, it changes the quality of your consciousness. It actually makes you a better person. And one One individual I know from the monastery, who wasn't necessarily a like a very personal person, a little bit abrasive and maybe argumentative and whatnot, just slowly over time, over a number of months, become a much more warm, friendly, just like a nice personality. You can actually, you can actually feel the niceness, the friendliness, the goodness, actually coming from the nature of this individual, because the rough edges, the rough spots through the course of meditation are being slowly, smoothed off, and the personality is being polished up. So you're developing into an individual who's just much more nice and friendly and understanding and easygoing and more of a sensitive person to relate to. And you can get a person who's who potentially could be a real hard case, and then you can have them meditate for maybe every day for at least 5 or 10 minutes for 12 months, and then you would see a very, very different person, after a full 12 months of practice. And then even the average person who's not a Buddhist and not a meditator would see the change in that individual, because you're looking at a refinement of the character of that particular person. So the effect on the personality, it's quite subtle, but it goes quite deep into the nature of the individual. So as we look at the relationship dynamics between you and the close people that you mix with, that one way to get a sense for the connection that you have with the people around you is just go, just go straight to the heart base, go to the one's feelings, one's emotions. And naturally we all have mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, close friends and associates, and you can sense or you can feel a tangible quality, to the connection with this person. It's like some people can have, very, 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 very good friends this kind of experience, doesn't change in a major way. You could have a good friend that you may only contact maybe every couple of months. And you could have known this person from very young, even from 11 or 12 years of age. And even, when you're 50 plus, that the quality of the friendship with this person, it doesn't change to any great degree. The feeling of loyalty, trust, and respect, it's still quite present. And quite firm with the personal connection, and you may possibly feel that with some individuals that when it comes down to tin tacks, you could virtually trust that person with your very life. And I had a situation where many years ago, when I was in my mid-20s, I was in a car accident with a family friend, and this this particular person, you know, when we actually hit the other vehicle as that person was speeding into a roundabout, they actually, leant out of their safety belt, and they braced my body against the seat and put their own essentially so I wouldn't actually hit the windscreen, because the vehicle actually struck from the driver's side. And when that person, my friend from early childhood, or say like mid-teens on, put their own life at risk to basically save me from harm, from potential injury, then you know that you could trust that particular person with your very life. You can trust them with absolutely virtually anything, with money, business arrangements, with your girlfriend. You can trust them with anything. And that's the test. If you're, it's a hard call, but if you have a very, very close friend, and they put their life on the line, to protect you, that's virtually as good as it gets. And you can feel between different, you'll have a circle of friends, and for some people, it can be like even say brotherly or sisterly. It could be like even like a teacher student connection, where the person might be slightly older, and there's a friendship there, but they're the kind of person who is actually good for you. They can be a religious person. They can be a person, whether it's young or old, who's got quite firm morality or ethics, and they lead you in a, say, wholesome direction with, both in life and on the spiritual path, whichever spiritual path that you find yourself walking at that point in time. And so, those kind of individuals, whether it's mum or dad, brother or sister, close personal friend, these people are, they're very good for you. They're conducive to the path. They help you to develop good qualities. They protect you from, they help you protect you from yourself if there's potential, say, drug and alcohol abuse, and they protect you from bad friends. They help you to make, say, good decisions with money, with business, with life decisions. And, they are the kind of people that you have both a good personal and spiritual connection with, because you're looking at an increase in the quality of your life. And they're the kind of people that you should make an effort to mix with. So, when you look at the interplay, the dynamics as you go through the current life, with family, and especially family and close friends, that you're going to be working through your personal stuff, with these people, and your emotions are going to give you an awareness, and your emotions are going to teach you the current and the underlying dynamics and the personal connection you have between the two of you, or it could be the three of you, or the four of you, if you have a tight circle of friends. You could have like, you know, even you could have a gang of five or six, you know, say like buddies, you know, it could be male or female who, you know, who've been hanging out for years, you know, for minimum 5-10 years, or even more, you know, even more than that. And so, you know, if you've got, say, like a group, a gang of compatible friends, you know, like-minded friends who are good for each other, and, you know, these kind of personal dynamics are quite interesting because you can virtually guarantee, and especially you can almost guarantee it. It's very hard to prove, but, you know, people who've meditated for years, you know, this is something that you feel. It's a very deep, intuitive, emotionally based experience that, you know, you feel the underlying, the deeper connection with these people. And so, you know, very, very firm connections. You can be absolutely sure that with the process of karma, of karmic conditioning on the personal level, that, you know, you've been friends, you know, you've been good friends like previously, you've been potentially husband and wife, boyfriend and girlfriend, and the reason why we say this, you know, within the Buddha's framework of understanding, is karma is based on a process of conditioning. So you're looking at this conditioning of the body, of speech, you know, so we express ourselves through the body, through speech, through our thinking, our mind states, our emotions. And this conditioning process, it actually it repeats itself as you move from life to life, because if there was no causal basis, if there was no say like karmic seeds or causes for the current relationship, whether it's male, female, young or old, there's no basis, there's no underlying principle to actually bring you together between to bring your old friends, you know, previous parents, brothers and sisters, and extended family and associates. There's no underlying force or energy to actually bring you back into relationship with your past companions. So, you know, karma, you know, works on the principle of conditioning. So if you've been friends in the past, the potential is there, the conditioning is there to be friends in the future as you move from life to life. Because if there's no past conditioning, there's absolutely nothing to bring you back together again in the current life or in the future. And, you know, because when you look at this whole business, you know, karma is very, very precise, and, you know, it works according to time and place, particular lives. So, you know, if you can't connect with certain individuals, say in the current life, that when the circumstances are appropriate or suitable, then you will be reconnected with certain people in certain relationships at certain times, according to the very, very complex and complicated karmic forces and energies which lie behind you, both in the past lives and In the current life, the karma that you're generating, both in the current life and the karma which is dormant from the past, is acting on the current personality, and essentially it affects the course of your life. It shapes destiny is the wrong word. It shapes the direction of your life, your personal experience. And so you may feel, as you know, especially like the average person walking the street who is largely, say, like non-religious, they may feel that they live their lives. They get up in the morning, they go to work, they earn their money, you know, they're paying their mortgages, they're raising their children, trying to get a good education for their kids, you know, they're trying to, you know, scrape money together, you know, both for the mortgage to go on holidays, and they live as in a fashion that the vast majority of you are very, very well. You understand the dynamics very, very well in the world with your day-to-day experience. But the direction of your life is going to be subtly affected by all these energies from the past and the current life, and they're shaping the quality of your consciousness. And you may not necessarily be aware of the, say for example, when you look at your views, opinions, your attitudes, and the kind of people, the kind of family that you've been born into, and the direction that you're moving in, you may feel that, you know, you just take it for granted. You know, you live your life, you go from day to day, you do your stuff, you go to work, you know, you have your personal life, you have your hobbies, your interests, and some of you, you know, may have very, very interesting, fulfilling lives. If you choose to move in that direction. But, you know, we may think, we may feel that, you know, as a conscious entity, that, you know, I'm essentially like, I'm calling the shots, you know, I'm making the decisions, and I think the thoughts, and I feel the feelings that I have, but essentially, you can, for choice of better words, you're like a, say like a conscious, I wouldn't say, maybe, you know, just to be slightly radical, like a puppet on a stage. You know, your past karma, it's affecting you and influencing you in very, very subtle ways, and you may think that you're calling the shots in this life, that you're in control, you're making the decisions, you choose the friends that you have, you choose the partners that you have, that you travel to the countries that you like, you spend time in different locations with different people at different times, but essentially we've got this incredibly complex network of karma going back into the past, which is acting upon you from the current life, from a deeper level, and it's slowly affecting and influencing the mindset that you have and the choices that you make. And so, you know, especially this is where meditation can be really, really valuable, because it makes you more sensitive and more intuitive with this kind of process. And as you become more calm, more peaceful, more joyful, you start to, your ego boundaries start to extend over the years. And as you mix with, say, people in life in general, just say, for example, I was in Bunnings and I went to look at the pretty flowers in the garden section, and I took a few nice shots for my parents who are really into gardens and shrubs, and I just connected one of the people who was working there. I just made a very, very short connection for about 5 minutes, just talking about just the way, with the underlying factors why some plants are successful, in particular areas of the garden, and this person's a bit of an expert, so we were discussing about soils and sunlight and all the factors which go to growing plants successfully, because I was drawing on this person's experience. And then you think to yourself, because especially because the meditators are much more aware of this. It's just, these are very, very little, very, very small incidents. But when you go through life, say for example, you meet people for 5 minutes or for 5 years, you meet them in different times and places. When you look at the timing is very, very precise. It's very, very accurate. You don't meet people by random chance. Karmically, to be a little bit ethereal. You were meant to meet that individual, at that time, on that day, in that location, just very, very briefly, for some reason. There's an underlying, there could be some potential background, an underlying seed where you connect with that individual, maybe very, very briefly. You think, it's just nothing. I just bumped into this particular individual, and just for a couple of minutes, a little bit of interesting chit chat, and we part company, and I may never see you again. I may never see you for the rest of your life, but without sounding too too sort of dramatic, it's meant to be that that little chit chat for for 4 or 5 minutes, that was meant to be, just for that very short experience in that particular time and place, and the potential, so when you really look at the relationships you have with other people, it's really quite incredible, because over the years, as you develop your meditation and your ego boundaries extend out, and you start to get this sense for the, just this great human, say, family that we find ourselves in. And when I was sitting at the cafe in Bunnings, the lady who was running the cafe was an English lady, and she was very, very positive and friendly and warm and open, and her heart was completely open, calling people darling and gorgeous and cupcake and beautiful, calling the young men cupcake and little, calling little boys, cute little names and whatnot, and really it was quite in that kind of attitude. It takes, a really good, a very, very positive attitude and energy, mental energy, And you know, you really like people. You know, you're friendly, you're positive, you're optimistic. You know, you're looking at the goodness in other people, and you know, that's it's a very valuable kind of attitude as well, because you know, if one person can do that, that means two people can do that, three people can do that. So you know, that kind of conditioning and that kind of experience, personal experience, you know, makes other people aware that, you know, we're not just isolated, you know, isolated little individuals just running, you know, scurrying around, you know, going about our business on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, as that lady at Bunnings was, you know, super friendly, energetic, positive, some of the other people in the cafe were quite, you know, fairly, you know, their energy, they were quiet, subdued, they didn't talk, you know, they didn't engage anyone, they didn't look around, and there was a big difference between them and her. So, but, you know, that kind of, that some, you know, even, I didn't speak to her at length, but, you know, that person, there's something deeper going on in the personality of that individual. They are an individual whose heart qualities, they're not like average people. You know, her heart was really just fully open. Her emotional expression was like maxed out, and she wasn't afraid. You know, there was like a sense of trust, and she wasn't afraid to really extend this feeling of love and goodwill and kindness. You know, you've got to be a person who's confident, who's trusting, who likes oneself, who likes others. You know, it takes a number of personal qualities to extend that kind of mind. You know, when we're in communion with other people. So, you know, we can have this kind of mindset where we, and especially the people within the BSWA fraternity, Jhana Grove, and up at the monastery, we have this kind of big mind experience. And instead of just, you know, just like me and you, and them, it's like us. The boundaries become very, very faint, and it's like, you know, we're looking at this sort of like, you know, this big human family that we live in. And so, you know, as we move through our day-to-day experience, that the people that you meet, you know, even complete strangers, and small relationships with people here and there, you know, don't underestimate them. These people, they really count, because if you meet them just for a couple of minutes here, 5 minutes there, 10 minutes, you know, on a later day, you can absolutely guarantee that you met those people briefly, if not in the current life, in past lives, especially the life previously, or the second life back at the most, because it's so close to you. And don't ever underestimate the potential. You know, when you meet and engage people, and you know, it could be quite briefly, just fleeting. You can meet someone for 5 minutes, you never see them again for the rest of your life. You know, don't think that connection doesn't matter, because there's the complexity and the power of past karma and the karma in the present life. It brings you together for a reason. Your life is like a classroom, and one's personal karma that you have between oneself and other people, it's teaching you, and it largely teaches you on a emotional level, because, you know, you need to feel your experience, you know, both for good and for bad. You know, you really need to feel your experience as a human being in order to understand the way that karma works through your personality. So, you know, as we go about our day-to-day experience, all the people that you meet, they do matter. They are important. They have a place in the complexity of the karma that you have behind you. You know, these people are going to connect with you again and again and again and again and again, going into the next 5 lives, 10 lives, 50 lives, 100 lives. You know, the seeds, the energy, the background energy and forces, you know, they're going to be there, and they're going to draw you together with that person, and they're going to help you learn, and they're going to teach you either very, very fleeting, very, very briefly, or in a very deep and profound profound manner over the course of your lives. So essentially your experience as both a human being, or even within, say, as a being within the higher realms, even as a deva being, you're looking at this experience of learning and understanding through relationships with others. So I'll bring the talk to an end and open the floor to any potential questions.
Thank you for your talk tonight. It was very, very interesting and beautiful meditation. I'd just like to share, it's very natural for me to see past lives with meditation and without meditation. And because of that, I actually became a past life therapist. And with one of my clients, she was very suicidal. She wanted to actually commit suicide. And I took her into past lives, and that didn't help. And so I took her into a future life, and that actually, she was fine. She actually then had a purpose to live. So can you talk about future lives at all?
Yes, so the understanding of the future life experience. And naturally, you can train for this capability, and it takes, quite an amazing degree of mind power. But the potential is there, both for the lay practitioners and the monastics. So, for the understanding of future lives, you need an understanding of both the past and the present life, and to give you an idea how the level of mind power you need to accurately understand and interpret the course of the future life experience, that the Buddha said, the Buddha was the only person who could accurately forecast or give prognosis for the exact, say, rebirth conditions and experience for essentially any person whatsoever. The Buddha was the only person who could accurately forecast the future life potential for any being whatsoever who came to him for guidance or for instruction. But the potential for, say, for practitioners, say, as human beings with psychic potential, will be there. But one, as I mentioned, needs, it's like the understanding, like a synthesis of both the past and the present life to a minimum degree, because the complexity, it's phenomenal. As any say past life therapist is well aware of, it's like the amount of information and the amount of experience. It's like tapping into the internet. It's just, you know, just phenomenal. And for you to actually accurately sift through and identify and focus on essential details, which you know are key principles and triggers. So, say for example, a person who was suicidal in the current life, you can virtually guarantee that the person was in similar circumstances previously. But you can interpret this in a number of ways. There can be a number of angles with a person, say, with suicidal ideation, where if you, say, for example, you're an individual who has taken the lives of, say, other human beings or animals to a significant degree, then the potential is there for you to be afflicted with, say, the potential to kill oneself on the personal level, or to have other people kill you, other human beings take your life, or even wild animals to take your life, or things like misadventure, having like accidents, completely out of the blue, extraordinary circumstances. Like the one just came to mind is that there was a couple who were bushwalking on a mountaintop in Melbourne, and that the young man got struck by lightning, was killed. And you know, you're talking about, he was standing, like, this is completely obvious to all of you, but he was standing in a particular spot at a particular time, in a particular place on a particular day, and this young guy was struck by lightning and killed. And can you just imagine, all of you, you know, can think of just how incredibly rare. You know, I'm not being unkind when I say this, but that was no accident. That young man was meant to die. This is not just an accident. That young man got unlucky. He was meant to die. When you look at how precise the background details and the background conditions, when people have these incredibly wild freak accidents, they lose their lives. There's a very, very, very clear, very, very precise reasons why this takes place. And so, as I've already mentioned, you're looking at this incredible complexity, and the skill level is very, very high to be able to interpret and forecast and diagnose, the past life experience and the future direction of individuals. But you can certainly train in these particular skills. But the people that because I don't move in spiritual circles, I have much contact with, say, clairvoyance and spiritual mediums, but it's a very, very valuable a valuable, say, a spiritual power if you can develop it.
Thank you.
I hope that made sense. Yeah. And there's a lady directly behind. And
you as well. Thank you. You may have already answered my question. So I think what I understand what you're saying tonight, perhaps you can just re-clarify it for me again, is that our past lives predetermined our future lives. So if I stand back and observe people around me, there are some people who are like butterflies, have lots of success, get on very well with people, have bright personalities, seem to do very well in life, and there are other people who are isolated, lonely, miserable, got no personalities, can't communicate with people. So is karma the cause of these things? Why one person struggles, gets nowhere, and someone else can just really attract all the right or happy things in their lives? I'm always confused about that.
Yeah, so where any particular, say for example, you've got a person in favorable circumstances who has everything, essentially, like, you know, in a nutshell, everything going for them on the personal level. Sorry, they've got potential for, you know, good lifestyle, friends, money, opportunities.
They attract the right circles. Like I know some friends who are really very negative, isolated. I myself sometimes attract in my life not always the sort of people I would like to attract, and I often wonder why that is so with me. I would like to be a little bit more outward, friendly, open, loving, and I don't always attract those sort of people into my life. So I'm always curious where does that come from?
Essentially, so you're looking at the nature of your karma. So as you find yourself now, your current experience, you know, your human experience right now, essentially it's shaped, as I mentioned, it's shaped by that vast, I'd say like undercurrent, that vast, call it like a vast reservoir of past karma, the whole complexity of all these past lives, hundreds, thousands of lives, which reach you, the effects of the karma. It reaches you at certain times and certain places, and so where you find yourself now, you're made up of everything that you've experienced. Say, like, you know, from the past, where you find yourself now is a product of everything that you've been through in the past. So, but you know, you have the awareness to make decisions to move in certain directions. You know, if you've got an awareness of spirituality, the Buddhist path, even the Christian path, you know, you can choose to move in a more positive, say, wholesome, beneficial direction. And everyone knows, you know, that if you're a friendly, positive person, you tend to attract. Excuse me. You know, like-minded individuals. It's completely obvious. If you're negative, hostile, standoffish, that you're going to essentially push people away. It's just common sense experience.
But not everybody is always aware that they're doing this. Observing around people, a lot of people aren't always aware that this is the.
Well, exactly. You know, I mean.
So how do you get that awareness and how do you change it?
I think the best thing, and it's for especially for people in that category, who lack sensitivity, lack underlying awareness, they need to meditate, because I've got a friend. I'll just speed it up a little. I've got a friend who's. I mean, he's a fairly smart guy. He's 50 plus, and you know, his boyfriend girlfriend relationship scenario over the years really hasn't gelled. He hasn't really met many people. You know, he's got two sisters. He's quite comfortable with females, but you know, he's things haven't really worked out so well. He's not really happy with his life, the relationship thing. He's basically he's protecting and looking after his mum, who's got health issues, and you know she's the only one he can rely on. So he's a bit trapped this and that. But he's incredible. I was on the phone with him 2 hours. In a nutshell, I was on the phone with him for 2 hours going back 2 weeks back, and he was so negative, and essentially so unhappy, so negative. I mean, I basically had after 2 hours, I had to shut him down because he just kept going on and on and on, and otherwise I would have been forced to essentially tell him exactly what he was doing. And like my brother, he was going on. He was with my brother about 12 months back. They were drinking, and he was going on about how he was going to improve his life. You know, this, that, and the other, make changes and whatnot. And my brother is a bit up front, just told him straight to his face. He said, David, you are lying to yourself. He said, you know, why don't you wake up? You know, you're not going to change. You're going to be the same person that you have been for the last 40, 45 years. You keep talking about changes. Oh, they're going to see the new, you know, David, you know, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And it's complete bull. They're so locked in, they're so ingrained in their own thinking, their own mental, their own feel. They're locked into their feelings, they're locked into their own mental habits. And the only, you know, this guy's not stupid. He's doing okay, but he's got to change his attitude. No woman is going to touch a guy like that with his attitude. And he better wake up, because he's going to die a lonely old man. And I'm not joking. And his attitude is a major source of the unhappiness that he experiences. He has got himself to blame. And
so if he doesn't change, does he carry that into his
next
life?
No, he's still the same guy.
No, but will he carry that into his next life, is what I'm saying, if he doesn't make the change?
That conditioning and those habits and those attitudes are going to continue on into the future. This lady here needed to talk. Up front, straight up front.
Me?
Yep.
I'm just wondering, is there something that affects the speed of karma and how quickly it comes back to us, or has its effect on us, and what is that effect? Like, when you see people who are open-hearted, good people, and then they have some really negative experiences or bad people come into their life, or tragedy, why is that happening to them when they have obviously begun to lead a good life or are leading a good life in this lifetime? And is there some way that we can bring on more karma so that we can work through it quickly and let it go?
Yeah. All right. So when you look at what the person's going through, so for example, you as you already understand, this vast storehouse of karma behind you. But you know, you have choices. You have a mind. You have conscious awareness, and especially the meditators, they develop this subtle knowledge and understanding as the years go by. They're not like other people. Like if you get someone who meditates for 5 years, or even 12 months, you can feel it when they walk into the room, and especially even 5 years, you can spot it straight away. They're not like other people. They've got a sensitivity, an awareness, an intuition, which mainstream people don't have at all. But I always recommend this, you know, for people to meditate even for 5 minutes a day, even if you're flat out, you're busting your chops, you know, working for a living, raising your kids, covering your mortgage, you know, this, that, and the other. 5 minutes a day, you know, after 4 weeks, 8 weeks, you know, you can see the difference, the change in the person. But it improves the quality of your personality, yourself as a person. It improves the quality of your relationships with other people on a subtle level. It allows you to help feel the dynamics between yourself and others, and to make decisions which are more, you know, essentially more intelligent, more wise, because you know, you're moving through life with a greater awareness. Like, I'm not trying to be like sort of really, you know, sort of ethereal here, but it's a, you know, this path, it's a very feely path, and when you've been meditating for 5 years, 10 years, you know, you really feel your relationships with other people. You know, you're on the emotional level, and you can especially when you understand, say, the like Buddhist dynamics and principles, you know, you get a greater appreciation what you go through with other people, because it, you know, it's not just like, you know, we just go through our lives, you know, just on a treadmill on a day-to-day basis. There's amazing, incredible things happening in the background, shaping the course of one's life. You know, moving, you know, right into the future. So, you know, you can develop the quality of your character. You know, the course. You know, you can make wise choices in the course of one's life, because, you know, you just the whole dynamics, the complexity, there's just no end to it. All the hundreds, the thousands of people that you meet, you know, as you move, as from 1 year to the next, hundreds of people, the background dynamics are incredibly complicated. Some people don't even give it a second thought. I met Bob down at you know, at the cafe. You know, we had a chit chat about this and that and whatnot. But, you know, you could have been connected with Bob for, you know, for maybe 10, 20, 30 lifetimes. And, you know, these things don't happen by chance. So, you know, this whole karmic principle, you know, it really has power, and to affect your relationships with other people, the course of your lives, and it's something, you know, you can just, as an experiment, as you go through your day-to-day experience, I mean, just keep it ticking over in the back of your mind that, you know, that your karma is unfolding moment to moment to moment to moment, as you move from day to, you know, from one day to the next. Just imagine that. Just really ingrain that in your mind. As you move through your daily experience, my karma is unfolding in my relationships with other people, minute to minute to minute, you know, through the course, you know, of, you know, like, you know, 365 days a year. It's constantly working through you, and it's placing you in certain times and places with certain people. But many of us, we just can't. The people who meditate have a greater sensitivity for us. But our life is like a stage, and we're like actors, and we have all these different roles to play at different times. But you're looking at this kind of massive interplay, this massive theatre, like actors on a stage with different roles. And you know, just going on and on and on and on into the future. Were there any other questions at all? This lady in the front.
I would like to ask. You are mentioned. I've got a question. You were mentioned that we can meet people through our lives, and they are meant to. We were meant to meet them because of the karma.
Yeah.
My question is: is there are different levels of karma? Let's say, is the same type of karma that I have with a boyfriend, husband, or friend, that a person that I met 5 minutes in the train station or something? Are there different kind of
intensity
or so?
As a human being, without getting overly complex, as a human being, we have different relationship karma with different people, and you can feel it. You know, the connection that you have with one's boyfriend, with one's children, with one's workmates, the roles that you have, where you find yourself, clearly indicates the format. So for example, with mum and dad, the parental relationship karma, it's predominant. It overpowers any potential underlying karma that you may find in any other format. So realistically, it's quite possible for you to reconnect with mum and dad as brother and sister, as child and parent, as parent and child, as close friends. The relationship format can change according to time and circumstances. If your sister, say for example, your sister or brother can't reach you within the sibling relationship, brother-sister relationship, they may be able to reach you as your child, male-female child, in the next life. If they can't reach, because of the complexity, I would never ever give anyone the impression I had an understanding of this, because it's so incredibly complicated. But if your sister can't reach you as your sister in the following life, she may be able to reach you as your child. But even that, even reaching you as your child, the mind boggles why that even is able to take place. It's when you really, really, really think about like timing and circumstances.
Happens the same with the loving relationships, for example, with your husband's ex-husband, or
it can completely change. If it's very, very close, there will be a boundary. Say if the relationship is really tight, any other person, any other human person. If we're just talking about the human realm, which is just one, which is one parameter, you can go much, much further, much more broad than this. But we're looking at the human realm. It can take absolutely within if the relationship is very tight, you're looking at boundaries. You're looking at the relationship can express itself as husband, wife, brother, sister, son, daughter, or close friend. You can absolutely almost guarantee it. But associates and distant friends, it's the relationship's loose. They're too far away from you. They're not close, tight, and personal. The people who are really, really tight with you, they're the ones who are going to be reborn within your immediate family circle. Distant people will be there at a distance, and you'll meet them at a distance, and the relationship will be at a distance. The karma, it's constantly teaching you. So if you just keep looking at the relationship, your feelings will give you a tangible sense for where you are at with that that person. Eddie.
It's on?
Yeah, Eddie.
Ajahn Abhi, I would like to say something, regarding the question asked by that lady regarding the previous life and future life conditioning.
Mm.
Yeah. Regarding future life, okay, it was stated in the suttas, okay, that when the Buddha, Sakyamuni Buddha, when he first gained enlightenment, the first thing he did was he recalled his future lives, depending on the karma he did. So he recalled first life, second life, tens of life, thousands, and then thousands of, hundreds of life, thousands of lives. He went back, okay? He could recall that because there's already the karma from his karma, isn't it? As regards the future, life prediction, there's not enough karma for this present life to predict the future life. You see what I mean?
For the person who's enlightened, or or for
the Buddha, he recalled his future lives depending on his karma. Okay. For future karma, okay, maybe the person can recall maybe later part of his life, but there's not enough karma to recall the future lives to come. You see what I mean?
Yeah, but essentially the bottom line is it's the psychic range. When you're talking about the ability to interpret or to assess a future rebirth, the bottom line is the psychic potential, and that comes from really, really deep meditation. To have that ability, you've got to have for some people it may take a couple of lifetimes, absolute minimum.
But there's not enough of the person's karma, maybe.
There's when you're talking about the future life.
I don't think so. Sorry.
There's not enough karma to predict the future life.
Future, maybe he can determine the later part of his life due to his present karma. That's what I think. Because the past is already that, you recall it's already to this karma, you recall his previous life.
Yeah, but
karma was born into this state. He recalled thousands of it. It was stated in the suttas.
Yeah.
The Buddha, yeah. But as for future life, there's not enough of the karma to determine.
But that's only for enlightened individuals. Say, as you understand that at the first stage of enlightenment, the Sotapanna, they have a maximum of 7 lifetimes. Even if that person puts their feet up and they do absolutely no spiritual practice whatsoever, the Buddha said this in the suttas, that the karma will be exhausted by a maximum of 7 lifetimes.
That is for
You can't go beyond 7 lifetimes. It's natural law. You can't go beyond 7 lifetimes. For the Sotapanna.
Yeah, for those who is going along the path, but for a normal person, you can't. That's what
But it's endless. For the normal, for the unenlightened person, it's endless. You will be reborn over and over and over again into the infinite future until you realize the Dhamma.
Yes.
That's when it breaks the cycle of karma and rebirth.
But what state it is, we won't know, because you don't know. There's not enough karma to be.
You've got to be. You've got to be, in order to cut the cycle. Realize any of the 4 stages.
I know, the stages towards
enlightenment. And then naturally with the insight knowledge, the fetters, the underlying karmic connections are broken, the number of lies becomes shorter, 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 until it's non-existent. I'm not sure if that made any sense at all.
Oh, thank you, Eddie. It's good to just have this discussion.
You can have a chat with me later. Even in my own mind, it's not perfectly clear what you said, but you can have a chat with me later if you like. So that might be it. That might be it. So we'll call it an evening. I'll hand it over to you, Drew. Okay.